This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News.
We are all lucky to have strong advocates for mental health in this community. And one of them is the caring and dedicated executive director of CMHA Waterloo Wellington, Helen Fishburn, who joins me for the monthly mental health check-in on the Mike Farwell Show. Helen, good to talk to you.
Good morning, Glenn. Great to talk to you as well.
First off, tell me about CMHA Waterloo Wellington. What is your responsibility? What do you set out to do each day?
Well, we set out, it's a great question. We set out every day to support and respond to the needs of our community relating to mental health and addiction issues. And of course, we're also the crisis response system in our community for people that are in mental health crisis. And as you've just described in your very thoughtful introduction, our work has pretty well quadrupled over the course of the pandemic. We've seen significant rises in our requests for service, in the complexity of needs, in the intensity of needs. It has been 16 months like we have never experienced in mental health and addictions.
That's a dramatic increase. What has the impact been on? I mean, can you break it down for us? What have people been experiencing? The ones who've been suffering the most.
Well, it's really the impact of really significant change in the way that we are living our life now. Some of the creature comforts, which are really at the root source of how we get comfort in our lives, you know, basic things like giving hugs, spending time with family, family dinners, going to concerts, going to sporting events, going out to restaurants, the basic things that all brought us joy, we have not been able to do. So we've been really forced into a world that has been marked by isolation. And that isolation has been necessary. We all know that intellectually because we've had to keep safe. And that's incredibly important this year. But there's an emotional toll for that. And we have really struggled with that isolation, with that loneliness, with not being able to connect with each other, to see each other. And then you combine the losses on top of that, right? We've lost people to COVID. People have lost businesses. There's been financial losses. It's a domino effect, right? So it's really, when you look at it in one word, it's trauma. That's what this year has really been about. Now, on top of that, you know, and Glenn, you don't know me, but Mike will tell you, I'm a half glass full kind of girl. There has been incredible kindness, resilience, innovation, compassion, and empathy as well. Our community steps up in these kinds of hardships, and we take care of each other, and that's exactly what we've done. But it's been a tough go.
You know, I don't recall a time in my life like the last, and I'm talking even pre-pandemic, the last, say, 5 years or so, when the subject of mental health was as out in the open as it has been over that time period, particularly during the pandemic. It seems like the lid has been blown off the subject and people are free to talk about it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I can tell you before the pandemic, we struggled to be kind of a formal player at the healthcare system. We had to often elbow our way into those meetings, right? Because everything was hospitals and family doctors, and all of that is so important and so necessary, of course. But mental health and addictions often lived in the shadows. And we are now very much the conversation, literally the conversation. And that has been the great equalizer in the pandemic for us, that we now have a seat at the table. It is being so recognized as such a contributing factor to so much of what we're seeing in our healthcare system, but everywhere, in our workplaces, in schools, in our community, you name it. Mm. Mental health is everywhere right now. And to be honest with you, we'll take it. We've been looking for an opportunity to come out of the shadows and really to name mental health and to get it the attention and the funding, of course, that it deserves, because people deserve that kind of care.
You know, I was listening a couple of weeks ago to our sister station, Sportsnet Radio, and a member of the Hockey Night in Canada broadcast crew was being interviewed about the playoff series between the Habs and the Tampa Bay Lightning. And he was about to go on, you know, he was about to do the game that night as part of the crew. And he said that the only reason that he wasn't going into the studio, into the studio inside the arena in Montreal was because he needed to stay home around comfortable, familiar surroundings for his mental health. And I thought, as I was listening, I thought, wow, it's so refreshing to hear him say that. And I wanted to give him a big hug and get on Twitter and tell him, you know, I'm so glad that you opened up like that. I mean, it's just unheard of. When I was a kid, there's no way you would have heard. I mean, of all venues or forums to hear, you know, a hockey broadcaster, right, talking about that.
Yeah. And honestly, Glenn, that has been what has really helped change the narrative. I mean, we still struggle with stigma every single day in mental health and addictions. There's absolutely no question about that. But we've come a long way. And the reason we've come so far is because people have been courageous. People who are in the spotlight, right? When you look at Michael Landsberg as another great example, mm-hmm. in addition to the one you just gave,
right.
And other amazing athletes and Hollywood stars and people who on the surface look like they have a perfect life.
Mm-hmm.
They've got fame, they've got fortune, they've got everything, but they don't have their mental health.
Mm.
That is what has really helped change the narrative and help people understand that it affects everyone. It doesn't matter your social economic status, or it doesn't matter your race or your background. Now, we certainly know that people who come from more vulnerable backgrounds and have had to endure systemic racism suffer even more.
Yeah.
But it is something that impacts absolutely everyone, and that has really helped us continue to stomp out the stigma.
You know, I think about one, I guess there, you know, you can't really isolate the conversation to one demographic, but I think about teenagers, high schoolers that have had to endure the stress of high school. My goodness. I mean, I remember the stress of high school and exams before the internet, before smartphones, before all of those distractions. It was stressful enough back then. But then you toss in social media, and study after study has shown that, you know, the use of social media is directly proportional to the level of stress that a young person feels. Then you toss in a pandemic, having to compete with your fellow students in an online learning setting. And my heart really goes out to that segment of our population. What can you tell us about the impact of the aforementioned factors on that demographic?
On youth, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been probably one of the most hardest hit groups that have experienced the pandemic and have really struggled. I mean, when you think of youth, for example, their life is being forged outside of their family home, right? They're, you know, they are at college, they're at university, they're developing careers, they've got jobs. Their entire life is their friend network. Of course, they're very close to their family, and that's their roots. But this is a group that developmentally are forging ahead in terms of their own independence, their own life. They're making their own decisions, and that is so important for them. And where they really get their joy and energy from. And this is a group that's really, for all intents and purposes, had to operate in their parents' basement.
Yeah.
They've had to experience their first year of college or university or their job in their parents' basement on their computer.
Yeah. Well, my youngest daughter went through that, and you know, I feel so bad for her, and I know she's not alone.
Not at all. We're seeing that across the youth. And, you know, again, they're missing their graduations and all kinds of things, right? Those are all key milestones. And that group, we really, the longer this pandemic has gone on, the more the more challenged we are seeing with that population, the anxiety, the depression, suicidal thoughts as well.
Yeah.
They've gone to a really dark place, a lot of folks.
Yeah.
So we've really worked closely with parents, with schools, and with community leaders, like hockey coaches and things like that, because we need all eyes on our youth right now. There's lots of youth reaching out to us, which is awesome, and we respond to those calls. But there are lots of youth that are struggling in isolation that we need to reach in. So we've really counted on our community to help us find that bridge.
You have talked at length with Mike over the past several months about a number of mental health challenges exacerbated by the pandemic, unemployment, substance abuse, just the overall stress of it all. But this morning, I know you wanted to focus on the conflict that many families are facing regarding the COVID vaccinations themselves. What are you seeing?
Yeah, this is a really interesting trend and theme, Glenn. And you're right, Mike and I have kind of mapped out the journey of the pandemic every month. And this theme is really something interesting. And that's when a family member doesn't want to get vaccinated. And we're seeing that even more and more now because it's much more available now, especially in Waterloo Region. They've done an absolutely incredible job recently. When you look at the Binghamton's Hockey Hub Clinic on the weekend, for example, anyone could walk in and get a first or second dose, which is incredible. So we're seeing now folks who really don't want to get vaccinated, and that's creating a lot of conflict within their family. And to the point where families are really getting ripped apart because of that worry and that conflict that one family member is putting others at risk. And it's leading to some family members cutting off that family member, basically saying, you are not part of our family anymore, pushing them away, alienating them. And then that's leading that person into a really dark spot in a really high risk category. So that's a concern that we're really seeing in mental health. We're seeing families very stressed by this, but we're also seeing that individual that doesn't want to get vaccinated really at high risk.
What is the impact? I mean, because I hear from time to time from and about parents whose child, of varying age is, quote unquote, too much for them to handle. And is anxiety prone or depression prone or, has mental health concerns. And they get to the point where they say, well, I can't deal with you anymore. They essentially cut them off. They may threaten to kick them out of the house. That sounds absolutely horrific thing for a parent to say. I'm not besmirching any parent who's been so stressed that they resort to those kinds of utterances, but what is the impact of that kind of behavior on the child?
Yeah, it's very damaging for everyone, right? And you're right. We never know what goes on behind closed doors. Every family has its own dynamics, has its own issues, has its own challenging. We never judge because it's really important to know that everybody, has their own story. But I will tell you that if we're kind of severing off that person, whether it's a child, a youth, a parent, a senior, and in this case, somebody, for example, that doesn't want to get vaccinated, there's a lot of damage that gets done because of that. And you lose that opportunity to continue to support that person, even, they're struggling. In this case, they're struggling to trust those vaccines, to feel safe with those vaccines. We know that right now there's a lot of people who are believing the lies that are being told through conspiracy theories, right? And they're vulnerable to those lies because they're isolated.
I'm glad you brought that up because despite how irrational we might view their viewpoint, the worst thing I would assume you can say to somebody in that position is smarten up.
Snap out of it.
Yeah,
or you're being an idiot. Those are things that are not helpful because, again, it just That person is already feeling so vulnerable. They're not sure what to believe.
Yeah.
They're not in a good spot.
No.
They're not in a good place. And by us kind of dumping on them or cutting them off or shaming them, it pushes them deeper into that darkness, right? What we want to do is find ways to keep the conversation open, to say things like, you know what, I can totally understand why you might be fearful about that, or, you know, vaccines can be scary, especially, you know, we've never experienced this type of pandemic in our lives. We're all here for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But then to bridge them to something like, you know, I'm wondering if you've ever thought about it this way, or can I share some new information with you that might make you feel more comfortable, or have you ever thought about it this way, or do you know that we've had vaccines in our whole lifetime? We've all been vaccinated for other illnesses. You know, so there are lots of ways that you can keep the conversation open, keep it active, to keep that bridge there, and eventually hope that that person will cross that bridge.
And I'm sure your training has taught you that you were instructed when you were first starting out in your field, that when you are relating to somebody in distress, sometimes it's not necessarily what you say, but the way in which you deliver the message.
Absolutely. Yeah,
how important is it to just stay calm and relay your message that way? I mean, and conversely, when you resort to anger, what kind of effect does that have?
Yeah, we really want people to come from a place of compassion and empathy, to understand that that person is fearful for a reason. So the more you can join with them, the more you can understand what lens they're looking out of and what they're feeling. That's only going to help you continue to be able to support that person.
Right.
And then again, hopefully, help them feel less isolated, less fearful, less alone.
Yeah.
And then they can make a good decision for themselves, right?
Helen,
we know that not everybody's going to get vaccinated, but we really want people to feel supported.
Keep talking, yes. Thank you so much for your time, Helen, and I've really enjoyed listening to you over this past year and change with Mike. Thank you and have a great day.
Thank you, Glenn. Take care.
Bye-bye.
The Mike Farwell Show, weekdays from 9 to noon on 570 News.